Sorry, everyone. Welcome to the Overeaters Anonymous 51st birthday panel discussion entitled Winning the Game Away, Winning the Away Game. Our panelists will be sharing their experience, strength, and hope about maintaining abstinence while traveling. My name is Melanie. I'm a compulsive eater and your leader for today's panel. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Please take a moment now to turn off all cell phones or other electronic beeping devices. Our OA preamble states, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and recover from compulsive overeating. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting for our own contributions. OA is not affiliated with any religious sect or denomination, political organization, or institution. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have stated that I am a compulsive eater. Are there any other compulsive eaters present? Great. Our three panelists will share their experience, strength, and hope on today's topic for 12 minutes each. Our timer in the front row will hold up signs indicating 2 minutes left and time's up. After panelists share, we will take a few questions. There are pencils, paper, and a few Ask It baskets circulating the room. Please write your question on a sheet of paper, fold it, and place it in the Ask It basket. Please indicate whether your question is addressed to a particular panelist or is open for anyone to respond. Please keep the Ask It baskets circulating. Our first speaker is Deva. Please join me in welcoming Deva.
My name is Deva. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thanks, Valerie, for asking me to participate in my own recovery and being here. It's a great topic, traveling abstinently. I'll share briefly on what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and to qualify. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous a little over 16 years and have a little over 15 years of abstinence. I did not get abstinent right away. I spent a year in here just coming to meetings and binging and dieting and not knowing what this abstinence thing was about, not knowing what you guys were talking about, but I knew that you had something that I wanted, which was freedom. I really heard people talk about freedom from binging. My top weight was well over like 230 or 240. I was a size 22-24, and I also have been hospitalized for anorexia, so I have both sides of this disease, and today I wear, my clothing size is about a size 10 or 12, so I don't wear a size 22-24 anymore. I have a lot of experience traveling before program, where I binged my way through traveling. And I do have experience traveling abstinently. I'm really grateful. I'll just say that, you know, before program, when I would go on a trip of any sort, it was just, it's the thing that still happens to me when I'm on airplanes. It's like the free zone that it's neither here nor there. It's like I really have to check in on committing on the day of travel. That's definitely sure if I'm traveling on an airplane. But you know, when I go on trips before I was in program, it just was this feeling that it didn't really count what I was eating. You know, it just was this feeling of I'm not at home, I don't have to be accountable, and I usually always come back from trips at least 10 or 20 pounds heavier. That's what my life was like before. And I remember when I was a few years abstinent, and I had started with a new sponsor and committed to a food plan, and I had a trip, a work trip. I had to be in New York for about a month. And I just remember in that early time of it being so incredibly terrifying to be away from home and having this new commitment to eating a certain way and committing to my abstinence, which for me is 3 meals a day and a fruit snack if I need it. And I just remember like hanging on as tightly as I could, and I'd call my sponsor a few times a day, and that was my first trip making it through. And since then, I travel a lot for work, and I can say that I have been to a lot of places around the world, around the United States, and made it through abstinently and come back abstinently, which is a miracle. And it's really cool that I'm speaking here, because talk about being accountable. I'm going to Norway a week from Tuesday for work. And it was so great. I had forgotten what the topic was, and I was like, oh, this is so terrific, because like, I get to be here and talk honestly and make a commitment to the room that, God willing, I'll go on that trip and be absent. And the tools that I use, one thing that is really, really important for me is, no matter where I am and if it's for work or pleasure, is I always find meetings. And OA meetings aren't always accessible a lot of the times in places I've gone, so I'll find any meeting with an A on the end will do. And you know, I've had just the most unbelievable God experiences hooking up with fellowships in other places. I've been to meetings in Paris, in the Czech Republic, in the outbacks of Louisiana, where I had no idea what they were saying in the meeting, to New York, to a lot of places where there's accessible meetings. But I've been to meetings in some really wacky places too. And one time when I was in Louisiana, I literally was. I was in the woods, like in the middle of nowhere, and I hooked up with this woman who was in the fellowship and just had the most incredible friendship with her while I was there. I was there for about a month or two, and it was the most amazing feeling to feel at home and not be at home, you know, and that's what it feels like when I walk into a room, a 12-step room. And that's one of my major tools, and that's something I'm going to commit to the room basically when I go on this trip in a week to find meetings there. And sometimes I don't necessarily if I'm not able to get to a meeting, I'll call someone in the fellowship there, and that makes me feel incredibly connected. I commit my food usually by email or you know, ahead of time to my sponsor or friend, and usually I'll email my food every day, which is I don't do that here, but that's something that's really, really helpful when I travel. And for international travel, a really good friend of mine who has a lot of time, she has this tool. She said, you know, because of time zones, the one thing that I do that if I hit a different time zone, I will immediately go on that time zone. So if it is dinner time, I'll eat dinner there to get on the routine of being there. And I take care of myself, like, immediately wherever I go. If, you know, there's certain things, I'll usually bring my breakfast, which is really easy and portable, but if there are things that I need for a hotel room or if I'm staying with family, I'll get those things the first day I'm there. And I have to remember, I mean, it literally came up for this trip that I'm going on, because I'm going to be with some other people, and, you know, I was, what was so hysterical is, I mean, it's kind of rare that even, you know, I got emailed actually what, and this is something just presently was going on, of what the meal choices were the first night we were there. And literally there was almost nothing I could eat on these meal choices. And I was talking to my husband about it, and he goes, "Deva, you have no problem like asking for what you need when we're here in LA and any restaurant you go to. Just email them and ask what you need." And I'm like, "That's right, I can do that." So that's like how I take care of myself around the food. And, you know, I don't have to worry about people pleasing, because, I have to say this out loud, you know, to not be concerned about what people think. Because where I come from, you know, I come from a place where I couldn't even leave the house. I was eating 24/7. I couldn't change my clothes. I mean, this is what it was like before program. I was binging out of control. I had lost my job. And I was a slave to the food. And the fact that, you know, I can, one thing my sponsor guaranteed me, which was so amazing, one of the reasons why I asked her to be my sponsor, is she said, "Deva, you know, you can go anywhere in the world and you can whip up an abstinent meal and, you know, at a 7-Eleven. It doesn't matter. You can, this is portable." And that I really hung on to that. And it's helped me a lot. It's helped me tremendously. So, you know, the other tools while traveling, if I can, you know, I usually don't bring a big book, but, you know, I'll bring some of the daily readers. You know, online makes everything so accessible now. I love that. If I'm traveling and I have my computer with me, I will look up literature on the internet. And, you know, the one thing that was drilled in me really early on also was about God being portable. And, you know, I have to remember I had such a difficult time incorporating God into my food choices in the beginning. And it's still hard for me now sometimes. There'll be times when, you know, I have to remember that the basis of the gift of abstinence is that, you know, that God's in charge and this is a spiritual program. And I wouldn't have any of this freedom, 85% of the time I say, without a higher power, you know, running my life. So I want to share, how much time do I have? What? Okay. I want to share evidence of a higher power while I've been traveling with a couple stories. One time I walked into a meeting in Paris and there was someone from my home group. That was amazing. Another time I was coming back from a work trip and I was in the Prague airport at 5 in the morning and there were four other people there. I was completely exhausted. I was working all week. And I turned around and there was a guy who used to be in OA standing there in the Prague airport at 4 in the morning. And we were on the flight back. And he and I, you know, he's still off, he might go, you know, to OA somewhere else. But I haven't seen him in a long time. And it was like all these little God shots of seeing people or being taken care of, and the reminders that I'm not in charge and that God is portable. Usually, you know, those will be really prime examples for me when my higher power just places someone en route with me. And so just to wrap it up, I'm really grateful to be here. I'm looking forward to hearing Vivian and Michael too, to hear some tools since I'm leaving next week. And I never actually take this abstinence thing for granted at all. I was sharing last week, you know, I said to my sponsor, I spoke at a meeting last week, and I was talking to my sponsor before, I said, don't you get sick of hearing your own story, like, out of your own mouth, you know? And she said, no, I never do, because usually at the end, I'm always so astounded that that was me before OA. And that's, you know, the gift of hearing my own story, where I come from, and to remember what are the tools and the steps. And even though I'm traveling and I have X amount of, you know, weeks, days, whatever, years of abstinence, it doesn't mean that I have any more power back. I'm just as powerless as when I walked in. So, you know, step one is really crucial when I am put in a situation where I'm around a lot of normies, that I'm still powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. So thank you for having me here, and really nice to be at the birthday party. It's an amazing event. Thanks to everyone who volunteered to put this together.
Our next speaker is Michael. Please join me in welcoming Michael.
Okay. My name is Michael Blanc, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michael.
And I want to thank Valerie for asking me to come and share. And I want to thank you all for being here. This is kind of it's a nice event. It's a nice place for me to be at 2:30 on a Saturday afternoon. I compare a lot. And, Deb is going, you know, to another country. I go to work, I end up in Boyle Heights, I work in Boyle Heights in southeast Los Angeles, and to tell you the truth, I don't travel that much. It's expensive. But I've been taught to say yes to any program request, and I've done a bit of traveling. I have babies that travel a lot more than I do, and I certainly see the results when the babies commit their food a day at a time when they're abroad or whatever, email me their food and stuff. And then if and when they don't, I hear complaints about they've gained weight. I just remember pretty vividly I went to San Diego. I'm from San Diego. That's the extent of my traveling. I have some relatives there. This was years ago, and I was just crazy. I was with the family, and I reached out to somebody at the central office there and got somebody's number, and I called that person three times a day. And with all my mishigas, with all my, oh my God, my wife doesn't understand, and my kids are driving me nuts, and I'm going to have a salad and a baked potato, and you know, whatever. And this lady didn't know me from Adam, but she listened patiently. I assumed she listened. I didn't see. She could have put the phone somewhere else. But I had the willingness to surrender to my feelings and my craziness and my food. To another human being and to a higher power. I believe if I ever get struck with a lot of money and do extensive traveling, I'm just going to do hopefully the same thing that I do on a daily basis here, is take a fifth step with my food. I admit to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my food, and it works best when I do it before I eat it. I've done it both ways. My old sponsor Richie said, "Well, when I tell you what I ate after I ate it, it doesn't work for me." I have his voice very strongly in my head, and I know it doesn't work for me either. I'm not under any illusions that I'm doing this by myself. This is my second time, hopefully my last time with you. I mean, I don't want to go out there again. I think the scariness of the world and the people and the places and the things without program and without food, is just too much for me to handle, and I don't want to go there anymore. I had stopped doing what we're all doing, very slowly. Incrementally, I stopped calling the sponsor, and I stopped committing my food, and I stopped going to meetings, and I got involved in what I thought was the answer somewhere else, and I had lost my abstinence, and it got real scary out there. And just as scary as not being able to control my food was the resentments and the fear that I felt with everybody out there. I literally couldn't get out of bed. I didn't want to get out of bed, and it was just very, very ugly and scary. Dr. Paul was alive at the time, and he's in our big book, and he wrote on acceptance, and I happened to hear him speaking at a meeting, and he said, "Never in my 20-some-odd years of sobriety," because he was an alcoholic, "have I had a problem to which the 12 steps didn't offer me a solution." That was so powerful for me, and I was so far away from the 12 steps at the time, that it was like a breath of fresh air, and I was filled with fear, and I got his phone number from his wife. I was too afraid to ask him for the number, I started calling him, and I started to get honest, and he suggested that I come back to the 12 steps that had saved my life originally, so I did, and I've been doing this a day at a time. My abstinence date is July 20th, 1990. Recently, about a year and a half ago, I went to the doctor and my cholesterol went up to 250. I had never had high cholesterol before, and that was extremely high. So the doctor was ready to give me the pill, which was fine because that meant I could eat all the In-N-Out burgers, you know, protein style, you know, without the buns. But I was eating a lot of red meat, and I was putting on weight incrementally, you know, a day at a time. And so Richie said to me, "You know, why don't you amend your diet and do a little bit more exercise, you know, and keep your commitments at the meetings, you know?" So I trust him, as I do my sponsor here in Los Angeles. and I started doing the deal, and so I have recently had a 30-pound weight loss. Wasn't planning it, just, you know, instead of the red meat, I'm eating chicken and vegetables and fruits, and half an hour, 4 to 7 times a week, I do a light jog, a light walk, you know. And it's relatively easy if I stick with you guys. I have a commitment on Saturday mornings at the kitchen sink meeting. It's my home group. And I don't know about you. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, but if I don't have a commitment at meetings, I don't go. I just don't go. My head still does a number. You know, there's something on TV. I have a family. That's a good excuse. And but I have that commitment, and it's held me in good stead. And I have a commitment to call my sponsor on a daily basis. I don't think he enjoys it as much as I do, but my sponsor knows on a daily basis all the misigosh that goes on with me. I've taken the steps in this program. I believe very highly in the 10th step, and I get out all my fears and my resentments on a daily basis, and I talk about what I'm grateful for and something outstanding that happened during the day, and I talk about my food and what I plan to eat, and if I'm going to change it, you know, I call or text it before I eat it, imperfectly. I don't do it, you know, absolutely perfectly. And if I forget to do it, my head will say, oh, well, screw it. But I'll say, you know, I screwed up, Carol. This is what I ate, and I didn't text it in. The honesty, the rigorous honesty, I guess, when I'm on the road or when I'm at home, is very important to me, and it doesn't come easy to me, although it's come easier because I've gotten in the habit of doing it on a daily basis. I eat out in restaurants. I have 3 kids. I don't know. I'm lazy. I don't like to cook. And so we're on the road a lot, and I do a lot of, you know, you can get a nice boil. I'm not advertising, but there's, you know, fast food restaurants that you can get, you know, good abstinence salads and chicken, and you can take off the skin if you want to. And waiters and waitresses are very helpful, because many times when I go to a restaurant, I don't know what's on the menu. And I'll tell the waiter or the waitress, you know, I really want to make healthy choices here. And can you help me out? You know, this looks good. The cheeseburger looks great, but I know, you know, that I'm not going to have it. What would you suggest? And I got to tell you, 9 times out of 10, the waiters and waitresses are very, very accommodating. It's to let my pride go and to ask the waiter or waitress, you know, that's the surrender for me. But they really help. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a restaurant, and I asked the waiter, well, what do you prefer? And he said to me, that's irrelevant. And I got a big resentment. I got a big, big resentment. And I said, if it was irrelevant, I wouldn't have asked you the question. And I thought that that would get him, but he didn't. He just said, well, that's it. And he wouldn't tell me what he preferred. And it was a question of being right or being comfortable. And I was extremely uncomfortable. And I pray, I think I made a pretty good food choice. I don't know, but I could have made a better one. I could have made a better one, but I was pissed off at this guy. And I was with my son, and my son's got 4 years on the program as well. It's a nice miracle. And he said, you know, Dad, the guy's a space cadet. What are you getting all upset for? And, you know, but I just had to let him know that it was a relevant question, you know, and you know, whatever. So, waiters and waitresses are good. I go to a meeting that suggests that we share from our current abstinence, and I try to adhere to that because what I had before really isn't relevant for what I have now. But I'm going to share about it because I went on a trip to Cancun with my wife before we started having kids. It's been a very fertile abstinence this time around. But I can remember I won the trip. I was on Name That Tune. I won the trip. And we were on these pyramids, and it was hot. And it was like the pyramids were like, they must be small people, those Mayans or something, because it was hot and we were crowded. And I wasn't drinking only diet soda. And they didn't have water, they didn't have soda, and I was about to pass out. And I don't know if I would do that in this abstinence. You know, I wouldn't go to any lengths, but I was very self-willed, and it was just a very uncomfortable trip. And now I think in this abstinence, I kind of wear it like a loose garment because my garments are a lot looser because I'm kind of honest and I think I'm a little bit more accepting of, you know, the lack of rigidity. I mean, my sponsor knows what's going on food-wise with me, and he'll make suggestions, and I'll take his suggestions most of the time. I don't want to, even more important than being corpulent or fat, I want to stay healthy. I want my cholesterol to be low. I like the effects of endorphin. When you run or walk for a half an hour, you feel calm. You have that natural chemical that goes on. I ran before the meeting. It feels good. I didn't have to put a pizza in my body to be, you know, to feel calm with you guys. So I'm sorry I don't have extensive travel experience, but I do have I think I know how to abstain a day at a time and feel relatively comfortable inside my body. And I appreciate you letting me share with you. Thank you.
Our final speaker is Vivian. Please join me in welcoming Vivian.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Vivian. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I want to thank Valerie for asking me to share here. It is a pleasure to be here. For anybody who doesn't know me, I've been abstinent since 1983. Wow. And I am one of the worst compulsive overeaters you could ever imagine. Sugar ruled me. I would wake up every morning and think, was I bad or was I good? And it just meant, did I starve myself or did I eat too much? And I was completely obsessed with food. So my food plan, when I got here, my sponsor suggested, and if you're new and you haven't gotten a sponsor, they told me just ask somebody. And it was really hard to ask somebody. I remember walking around with the phone in my hand, like, you know, finally I called her up and I said, will you sponsor me? And she said, yes, I thought you'd never ask. And so it's usually, to the person you're asking, it may be good to know it's not such a big deal for them. Like, it's not like an earth-shaking thing the way it feels like to you when you're asking somebody. It's just like an okay request. It's actually an honor for somebody to ask you. So that may help you if you're looking for a sponsor. Anyway, she suggested that I cut out sugar from my abstinence because she had seen the way I eat. One day we were sitting at a table, she saw a dessert there, and suddenly it just disappeared. And she said, what happened to that, like, rhubarb pie? And I said, I couldn't stand it anymore. I ate it. Like, nobody was eating it. It was sitting there on the table, on this banquet table, and nobody was taking it. Oh. So since then, I have done a lot of traveling. I wrote down places I've been. It's sort of like chapters to traveling with abstinence. I guess the big thing to remember is Michael brought up an excellent point. It is worn more like a loose garment when I go traveling because I cannot find the foods I have here as readily in Los Angeles, you know, land of whole foods, as I can when I go to like a Greek island or the Czech Republic or sometimes even to a relative's house. So you can all identify. So I do my best when I'm over there, and I've done different things. Like when I feel like I'm struggling, like in the beginning I took the 12 and 12 because it was smaller than the big book. You know, the big book is a big thing to carry around. So I took the 12 and 12 with me, and I read every night. And when I feel like when I'm going to be somewhere for 2 weeks or longer, I always go to meetings, and I become part of the routine over there. I've taken commitments at places in New York and I got to know the people in London. They actually had still the abstinence pamphlet for Gray Sheet, which I actually took back as sort of like a historical reference, like a document that we can't get anymore over here because we used to. And you find the same love and support there, and I called these people in between. The same love and support and went to the same meetings as they did, and so I felt like I was rooted. I kept God with me. What's your name? I forgot your name. Our luncheon speaker. Don, when Don was speaking, he reminded me, like, some things that I do in abstinence, I do when I travel, and I don't think of them as being any different, but I probably should mention them. Like, I do. I pray at night. When I'm in bed, I'm asking for God's will, and if there's any problems, I'm asking to be open to letting God's will be. I now text my food. I do different things. And also, this program is different for different people. Like Michael says, it doesn't work for him to text after he eats. To me, that's exactly when it works. Like that's exactly when I do it. I write down what I'm going to eat, and I've been texting now. And you're never too old to learn in this program, because I had gotten out of a relationship, and I had gained weight in it, as a lot of us do, because when we're unhappy, we reach for food without even thinking we're doing it. And I started texting food, and I do it afterwards, and it really cleans my food up. Because I did this when I was traveling, every day, because I just don't want to write down too many lines in the text. So I want to be really clean what I'm doing. So it stops me from just doing more than I would have, even when I'm away. I find that breakfast is the most funky one sometimes. Like sometimes I remember being in the Czech Republic, and they didn't have anything except, like, I was in a hotel where they give you free breakfast. I didn't have a lot of money, so I was going to eat their free breakfast. But they had, like, yogurt with fruit in it. Now, I read the ingredients and everything I eat. And if sugar is in the first few ingredients, I don't eat it. If it's in the fourth ingredient or more, I eat it. That's really been my abstinent food plan for all these years. And they just didn't have that over there. So it would have been just, like, bread or, nothing. And I thought, I'm just going to eat the top of this yogurt. Like, I just won't eat the fruit at the bottom. I just sort of have to, like, go with the flow. And then I remember I was in Panama, and it was really, really hot, and there was nothing to drink except orange sodas, and I couldn't stand it anymore. I had the orange soda. Would I do that here? No. But did it set me off and make me eat other things? No. It was something that, most of the time I'm able to make everything fit just fine, and other times, I decide not to dehydrate myself because I feel strong enough in my abstinence. If I had not felt strong in my abstinence, I would have just, gone thirsty. Yeah, it has to be like that. I feel okay in it. Obviously you check it out with a sponsor and sort of move forward. Another thing about traveling away, a lot of times it does involve seeing family for a lot of us. And a lot of times it's during holidays. So I know I've had a lot of prayers about saying the right things to my parents at certain times in my abstinence. Like, I remember there was this one time, and this does affect your food. For anybody who's new and thinks, what does it have to do with your food? Oh, boy, just about everything. Because if you're someone like me, my emotions come out in my food a lot of times, especially when I'm not working in program. So one time I went back to see my parents in New York, and I really wanted to tell my mother that I tell her off, really. Tell her that she had not been as kind and loving and supportive as I thought she should have been when I was growing up. And that I wish she hadn't done X, Y, Z. I think one of them was she shouldn't have chosen my major at college. I don't know. She wasn't accepting. I had like a list. And so I was taught in this program to pray for the right words to say. And so I did. I prayed. When was the right time? I prayed for the right time to come, and it never felt like the right time that whole visit. It just never felt like the time came up. And I came home, and my food was fine there. And I came home, and I realized that was something between me and myself that I had to work out. That wasn't something that I needed to bring to my mom. That would have made our relationship even worse. That was like a huge realization, and if I hadn't been praying to God while I was over there, I'm sure not only would I have overeaten over it, but I would have set our relationship back, like, many years, because it seemed to be slow growing. We would get better and better every year, but it could be knocked down in an instant with an unkind word. And you know, it's funny. As much as I've traveled, it really is hard to talk on this for 10 minutes, I have to tell you. Because it's really, it's not that much different. When I get on an airplane, I know that just airplane food, for instance, like if they give me some warm nuts, oh, usually if I'm hungry, I might eat them. Like here, I usually never eat nuts, but hey, it's on my abstinence and I am going to eat with the plane. Like I'm big on, like, I pay for this, so I want to see what I can get here and not bring it on the, pay extra for it on the plane. I'll eat the warm nuts. And I'm on vacation, for heaven's sake. You know, if I have a larger meal at Christmas or something, although I don't do that as often, but say I do, it's not a big deal. Say we go out to a nice restaurant. I will make up for it later in the day. If I eat a nice meal, then later I'll have a light dinner or whatever. And it's a little irregular with times, but my bottom line, I stick to my bottom line. And my bottom line for me is I am a sugar addict. For other people, it may be something different. They may be bulimic, so they don't purge. Whatever your bottom line is, you'll know what your bottom line is by working out with your sponsor. My bottom line is I am a sugar person, and I do not eat sugar. But even then, it was like, you know, I ate the top of the yogurt, but okay. I would still do that if there were no other choice. Or maybe not. Now I can afford actually to buy real yogurt, but it depends on the circumstance. I know that I've gone over, it sometimes can feel like you're like, whoopee, you know, I'm free because you're not in Los Angeles anymore. But that feeling goes away more and more the longer you're abstinent. It just feels like you're just continuing your life. You know, I still exercise when I get over there. 2 minutes left. Not so hard as I thought. I know sometimes it'd be hard to bring sneakers, but I mean, I actually think about these things. I pack stuff. I text my food in still. But it depends. I just don't do anything very much differently than I do when I'm here. And God is always with me. And that has worked all these years. And, oh, another thing I've done is I get commitments over there when I'm going to be there for 2 months or more. I really act like I'm living there because I am living there. And people are amazed and they really appreciate it. But I'm doing it for me because I'm going to be here a long time. Like I've gone places where I've stayed for a month and I get a commitment there because everybody's happy to have you do something for a month. And that keeps me going to the meetings and keeps me checking in. If it's less than that, like, you know, just a few days, I probably do nothing different. I just go on the trip and come back and I make the same food choice. I ask the same, you know, waiters to help me, help or not help, or look at very similar food choices that I would make. I guess I just don't get that feeling of, oh, I'm going to break out. Like, I guess that's the fear and the danger when you go away, that you think now you're starting a new life and it doesn't count. Well, it all counts. And the more I've traveled, the more I just don't look at it as anything different than the rest of my life. And I'm very grateful. God has given me a tremendous gift in keeping me abstinent. I do not ever, ever, ever want to lose it because I'm one of those hopeless people that would be, I'm too vain and too depressed. It would not be living to me to be not abstinent. It really wouldn't. I didn't have a good life then. I was all in my head. I was not happy. And this program has given me happiness and freedom. So thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you, panelists. It is now time for questions. We will stop at 3:25 p.m. Will you let me know when it's 3:25? Do you have a clock? Do you want me to? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Great. Okay. This is not for a specific specific panelist. The question is, how do you balance spontaneity with your meal plan when you're traveling/adventuring?
Well, I'll take that one. I guess I give myself a little more latitude when I'm away. I don't break my abstinence. That's inviolate. I don't want to break my abstinence. But I may eat some more, I may eat more beef. I may decide I want fruit for my dessert. I may have, you know, a cappuccino. I may celebrate a little more. I may go to an expensive place. And if something is there, if something's there that's usually not there and I have to make a decision, you know, go inside. Does this feel right? If it doesn't feel right, I don't do it. I get quiet for a minute. Like, is it okay? Do I want this orange soda? Do I think I'm going to be okay having this orange soda? If I felt shaky on that, I wouldn't have it. If anything, then I feel like this is sort of a treat, and I usually don't do it, but I think it's okay, and it would be something that I can text my sponsor or tell my sponsor, and it's fine. That's fine. Like, go with it, even though I didn't think I was going to be having that. Maybe I have a bratwurst, and I was Oktoberfest. I mean, I'm making this up, and I thought I usually would never eat a bratwurst, but I'm going to get into the spirit of the occasion. So,
this is for anyone. What do you do when you do not determine the menu? Have you ever had to punt, meaning face to face with what appears to be insurmountable circumstances?
That's a great question. For me, I mean, I appreciate what I heard from everyone here too, because there are certain bottom lines. I mean, for me, my abstinence is 3 meals a day and fruit snack if I need it. But there are certain food items that are bottom line that I do not eat. I don't eat bread and pasta. So there have been times where I don't make a compromise and I don't have that. So if they can't make the request of changing it, then I'll get something later. But the fact that I was able to, I've worked in Paris numerous times, and to be able to have been there, freedom in Paris, land of bread, to not have it and have other things accessible, and it has been amazing. So there are times when I'll compromise, but for my bottom line, I won't. So, but I appreciate, too, what I heard, because it does look very different when I'm on the road. My meals look different. Things look different. But there are certain bottom lines that I won't compromise.
This is also for anyone. Is there a difference when you do leisure travel, paying your own money, versus for work, where they pay?
Oh, that's a good one. Wait, say that again.
Is there a difference when you do leisure travel, paying your own money, versus for work when they pay?
Oh, I love that question. My first sponsor said there's no such thing as free food because we always pay for it as compulsive overeaters. So even if it's free and offer, I always think of that. You know, years and years ago she said it's never free because we're always paying for it emotionally, spiritually, and physically. So if it's not there, and even though it's free, I will spend my money. It doesn't matter to, you know, it's like my abstinence is worth it. So.
For anyone, do you have suggestions for what to do on a week-long work trip with no access to phone or internet?
No access to phone or internet.
Well, here, I'll go. I would be bringing literature. I would be bringing my big book, 12 and 12. Also, I would have a plan of what to do there. Sort of like things like no second helping, things like this, like work out with my sponsor, not knowing what's going to happen there, with some bottom lines that I'm going to stick to that are going to be stickable. Right now, I've never done this, but I would do it, certainly, as I'm thinking of this. I would write down every single thing I ate and commit that I'm going to read it to my sponsor afterwards. That helps me clean up all the time.
When I travel, I see it as permission to sample local foods, which would not otherwise be in my food plan. How do you travel abstinently without feeling sorry for yourself or feeling deprived?
You guys do the travel.
Okay.
I mean, I think we both said the same thing. We have bottom lines. There's like, for me, it's I look at the ingredient list. It's like it's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's sugar number 4. And if they don't know what's in it, I don't eat it. And that's it. But it still gives me tremendous latitude to eat a lot of different things. I don't have to eat every single thing in the country. Yeah. I think I'll end on that. And I just be grateful for what I do get to have and get to do.
Okay, great. This is for Deva. When you go to other blank A meetings, if you are asked to introduce yourself, what do you say? Do you ever raise your hand to contribute if you're going to a non-OA meeting?
If it's an open meeting, I'll ask if I can share, even though I'm not in that fellowship, but I am an addict. It's pretty simple. And usually, I mean, a lot of the small towns I go to are very, very open. If I'm in another place and it's a closed meeting of a fellowship I'm not in, I try to respect it and not attend it, or else I'll call the person and ask if it's okay. But everywhere I've been, everyone has always been open for me to share generally as an addict.
How do you do long flights and your food, i.e. 10 to 15 hour flights?
Yeah, I can do that one too.
Unless you want to do it.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have done that. I traveled to Africa, and it was really no problem. I would eat a meal, and then when I'm full, I'm full. I'm okay refusing whatever next meal they give me when I'm full. It's really, I paid for the flight anyway. You know, I'm not going to get more money for it by eating the extra food. I sort of pick and choose what I'm going to eat. I know I'm going to eat what's on the plane that I can eat. I don't eat the dessert, but I'm fine with that because God really removed that. I feel like that obsession, I feel like just the way it says in the big book, I'm in a place of neutrality where I'm not fighting it nor bragging about it. Just, it's okay with me not to have it, but I don't have every single meal that they give me. I have something and then I'm full and then I either can refuse or eat very little of whatever's given, and it usually works out very well. I get off the plane and I feel like I'm full, but I'm not stuffed by any means.
This one's for Deva. It says in your quote, "You can whip up an abstinent meal at a 7-Eleven." How? Example.
Oh, let's see. I'm trying to think. I haven't had to do that in a while, but. Oh my gosh, well, there's yogurt, there's usually fruit at 7-Eleven, there's some kind of protein bar, something like that. I mean, there's always, you know, if there's something that, you know, if I'm in that situation, I'll just call someone. Like 7-Eleven, if it's in the U.S., I'll call and talk to someone and be like, here are my choices, help me make a choice. Because usually if I'm relying on my own head, it's problematic. So either making a call and having someone help or ask my higher power to. But those are some things that come to me.
What kinds of foods do you take on trips, and would you be specific?
I mostly eat restaurant food on trips. I have a lunch freezer thing that keeps things cold, and I'll have like apples and bananas and celery and carrots, some fat-free turkey. There's 94% free popcorn that I'll pop a couple of bags and do that. So those are the accoutrements, the snack foods in between restaurants. 7-Eleven, by the way, has lots of vegetables and fruits and tuna salad and stuff like that. So, yeah, I have experience in having abstinent meals at 7-Eleven.
Do you ever change or modify your food plan, not your abstinence, when you travel?
I mean, I said what I've done. You guys want to be more specific? I mean, 99% of the time, no. But, you know, 1% of the time, things have come up.
I don't think I do. I do this, and again, I don't do extensive traveling, but I do the same thing when I go to San Diego, Palm Springs, that I do here. I just call in my food before I eat it, talk to my sponsor.
Okay.
I was so wondering, where would you go where they don't have internet or phone? Island? It really? Really? Or no meetings? Or? I don't want to go there.
Oh, by the way, I've even been on cruises, and they have OA meetings, and they have exercise rooms, and it's always the same people in the exercise room. Okay, there's thousands of people on these cruise trips, and there's 25 of us in the exercise room, and we're the regulars. So you can find it. It really is a searching type of thing. Is that it? Nope. All right, this is actually our last question. Do you have the experience of post-travel letdown, having pristine food while traveling only to struggle upon return? What do you do?
Yes. Oh my God, I have such experience where it's like I get very prepared if I'm going on a trip. Like there are foods that I bring. I bring my breakfast. I'll research meetings. I'll go on the trip, and then I'll come back, and it's the after effect of, okay, I made it. And usually I'm honest about it. You know, I get back in my routine and just plug in with my sponsors here and just do what I can do. But actually the most problems I have had with traveling is post-travel, is coming back and celebrating that I made it. And and it usually passes. You know, it's usually if I tune into the emotional reason behind that is coming back into my routine. And then after a few days, I'm back in my routine and it's fine. So I just plug it back into the program here and I usually pass it.
So that's... Sure. Okay, so we have time to take one question from... Yes, go ahead.
We can all take this. Repeat the question. How do you do about traveling locally when you're going to go to somebody's house and you don't know what they're going to serve, but at the same time you don't want to eat beforehand and miss out on something really great? That's it, right? Okay. Repeat it again?
No.
Oh,
good question.
Oh, a good question. Okay. Well, I'll answer quickly and then give it to the rest of the panel. If it's somebody's house that I think they'll have good food, then I commit to like one plateful or sometimes it could even be, would it be two platefuls? Very small ones, maybe very small ones. But anyway, I do platefuls. That's how I do it. If it's somebody's house where I'm not sure if their food's going to be good, I eat beforehand, because there's nothing makes me angrier than getting to someone's house and I hate their food. Like, I would much rather be sure and have something beforehand.
If it's a dinner party and it's something that I kind of know there'll be something, but I have been known, and my husband knows this, that I'll call the host and I'll ask, because I do have a specific food plan. And again, you know, I need to avoid my people-pleasing fear and take care of myself, because the abstinence is the most important thing to me. So that's that. And then if I'm going to a function and there might be food, I always eat beforehand, because I'm actually much more present with people, like if it's a big group of people, if I'm already nourished and I can like connect with the person, as opposed to being worried if I'm going to get the food I need.
The phone is a great tool for me, my cell phone. That, you know, if they have stuff that I don't want, my sponsor is only a phone call away, or one of you is only a phone call away. That little ice chest that I have, you know, with a couple of apples or a banana or something, I sneak out there and pop a little of that and then go back into the social situation and maybe be uncomfortable because they're eating food that appeals to me. But I can hang on for an hour or so. You know, I believe in instant gratification. And so what? I can't eat for an hour and everybody else is eating. So I pray and I use the telephone and maybe go to my car and pop a couple of pieces of fruit, and then after the occasion, I'll eat what is healthy for me. So.
Is that it? Okay. It is now time to close the meeting. Let's thank Deva, Michael, and Vivian. There will be another panel in this room directly following this one, so please take your conversations out into the hallway as quickly as possible.